Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 166 of the Brown County Hour. This is Sarah Lytle.
And Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. This month, our musical guest was a finalist in the Amplify Nashville Songwriter Competition, John Corey Brooks. We will hear two of his songs recorded in our studio and one with his band, West Fork Revival. We will also be taking you to the retirement celebration of everyone's favorite British bartender, Jeff Thompson, that was recorded live at the Brown County Inn on December 16th.
Speaking of celebrations, our founding mother, Pam Rader, leads a roundtable discussion with the Brown County Hour crew as we commemorate 15 years on the air. We have essays from Jim Eagleman, Dave Seastrom, and Rick Albertson, and we'll take you on location to Mike's Dance Barn as Billy and his wife, Carla Willis Crace, take us through the steps of line dancing.
In our first segment, we'll be taking you to Jeff Thompson's retirement party that we recorded live at the Brown County Inn. And we'll hear a few choice remarks from his favorite barflies. But first, we have an interview with our musical guest, John Corey Brooks, and we'll listen to a recording from his band, West Fork Revival, as they play Travelin' Man.
This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour. I'm here with John Corey Brooks. Hi, John. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing, Lucy?
Doing really good. You're our musical guest this month, and you just performed at Amplify Nashville, made it to the finals.
Yeah, that was an awesome experience. That was the first time I'd ever been to the Playhouse, and it's the second year for that competition, so it was the first year for me. But yeah, it was a good experience.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was a very close race from what I heard. So after the very first night at Amplify, I locked eyes with you because I was like, I need to talk to you because I want you on our show. Mm-hmm. And you said, oh my gosh, I know you.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
so
good with faces.
Yeah. We hadn't seen each other in 20, 30 plus years. The last time I saw you, you were 10 years old with a very deep voice, just like you have now.
Yeah. You and my sister hung out when I was little. And
we played travel fast pitch softball together. So your sister was completely obsessed with the Beatles. And I know that she blared it through the house. What about you? What were your influences?
I would say similar. My dad was really into music. I had a very extensive record collection. I would say, the Beatles. Yeah, I'm sure my sister really liked the Beatles. I really liked the band, Levon Helm and Robbie Robertson. And I just really liked that sound. And my dad listened to a lot of Bob Dylan in the band, the Marshall Tucker Band, the Allman Brothers. I wouldn't call it country, but I remember my dad saying that's about as country as he would get, listening to Pure Prairie League and things like that. So did grow up listening to a lot of country music, but kind of that classic rock, country-esque, southern type rock. As far as influences and things like that, even with the band that I'm in, we play some Marshall Tucker Band stuff. We don't do a lot of covers. I write all the songs for the band, but definitely draw some inspiration from those older classic rock bands.
So you just spoke about your band. What's your band name?
West Fork Revival is the band name. I grew up, as you know, in Owen County, and when I joked at the songwriter competition, it's the poor man's Brown County. pays homage to the West Fork of the White River. The drummer in the band, he's actually from Detroit originally, but he brews beer at the Civilian Brewing Company there. He's the brewer, the bass player I grew up with, the pedal steel player I grew up with. So, and they both live in Bloomington, but figured since I'm writing the songs, I get to name the band, right?
Right.
They were okay with it.
I heard that one of the songs that we're going to showcase here is a pre-recorded song by the West Fork Revival. Can you tell us the name of the song?
It's Traveling Man is the name of the song, and that was a live recording from the Orbit Room in Bloomington, and it was a song that I had written over 5 years ago, and I have an EP that I released in 2024 called TV Cowboy, and that's on there. And then we play all those songs, and then I've written songs since then that we haven't recorded. And I believe that was actually from the Orbit Room's recording from that. For them to be able to do it was part of a grant, I think, actually through WFHB.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of comes coming full circle a little bit, but yeah.
Awesome.
That's the one that we have out. And then, yeah, we'd like to do some recording this winter or kind of after the holidays and, you know, not a lot of gigs going on. So,
yeah. So let's take a listen to it.
Okay.
Well, traveling man, won't you stick to your road? Because I know that your bones are getting old. Your path is worn, your heart's made of gold. Well, traveling man, won't you stick to your road? Spring is here and winter's gone. The ice melts as the birds sing their songs. And I'm singing but to a different tune. The flies buzz and the flowers they bloom. Ooh. Again, no, your path is worn, your heart is made of gold. Traveling man won't stick to your road. Oh, the grass is growing high up on the hill. I wait here for you still. Grass is growing up so high. Pass
was West Fork Revival, Traveling Man. We're here with John Corey Brooks. So you told me earlier that you got kicked out of sixth grade band. How did that happen?
I wouldn't say I was kicked out. It was more of a choice. And I don't know how band works in schools now, but at least then, the summer of fifth grade to sixth grade, if you want to be in band, they have a summer band program where you pick an instrument. Of course, everybody wants to play the drums. But I was playing the tenor saxophone. And after that summer, the band director kind of goes around and says, first chair, second chair, pick a different instrument or don't do band. And I was in the category of pick a different instrument or don't do band. I was just like, I guess the pridefulness in me was just like, I'm not going to do band.
So then when did you start picking up a guitar?
Yeah, so that I told my mom, I think they picked me up and was like, I'm not doing band anymore. And they were like, what? Yeah, like they wanted neither one of my parents play music at all. That's one thing they wanted for me to do. And I was like, buy me a guitar. That's kind of nice. What I wanted. And of course I wanted like a Fender electric guitar, something, but they bought me like an Alvarez acoustic guitar, which I'm grateful that they did. It was a good guitar to learn on and started taking some lessons. And then, I got to the point where I felt comfortable enough to kind of pick it up on my own.
That's great. Yeah, so good for you. What's your process when you write a song?
There's a couple different ways that I go about it, but typically, usually put it on my phone now, 2025, it's the computer in my pocket, the chords and the actual music part from the guitar. I'll kind of put together and I'll kind of go back and look at some of that stuff and mess around and, hey, I like this sound or I like these chords and, I like this idea. And then I kind of get that snowball effect rolling. And sometimes it works out. I mean, there's songs that I've written that I don't play at all. And then I probably don't even remember. But I do also try to just, again, on my phone, record it and then write it down, then start writing it down, writing the actual song. I'm like, all right, I played G and C here, right? And that was, and then recording at least some of the melody of it or the rhythm of it too. So that's kind of
my process.
Would
you say you're a fast songwriter or you just take your time?
I say pretty fast. I would say I'm pretty fast. I'm not that everything needs to rhyme, but I think ideas come to me pretty quickly.
Nice.
Usually. And I know at least with the band, and that's one good thing about having a band with really good musicians is, if I bring a song or I write a song and bring it to them, both the arrangement of it, that they give me feedback or, hey, what if we do this? And then along with even some of the lyrical components, it's like, hey, sit on it, or they learned the song obviously, and then come back and have feedback. So that's one of the benefits definitely of having a band.
Absolutely.
And having and good musicians play with you, and I guess being
open to their feedback
100%. Yeah, that's I think that's an important piece. Yeah.
Absolutely. You work as a forester, and I know that you do some of your job is partly in Brown County.
Yeah. Yeah. So I work for the Hoosier National Forest. That covers all the way from Brown County, Jackson County, Monroe, all the way down to Perry County, which is on the Ohio River there. And then, Brown County is great. A lot of great forest land.
So you said that you're going to record some coming up, and I know that you work hand in hand with Rainwater Studios in the past.
Yep.
And then you were also recently on Local Live with Nikki Seven.
Yes. Yeah. No, Nikki's great. And then, Kenan and Mandy, both great folks at Rainwater Studio. So we did the whole band did a session with them that's on their YouTube channel. So you can check that out.
And nice. Then
as part of the being in the finals with the Amplify Nashville, someone had kindly donated for all the finalists, if they didn't win the top prize package, $500 to record some music with Rainwater Studio. So wanted to take advantage of that for sure.
Awesome. How can we follow you online?
So we have an Instagram, West Fork Revival. I have my own music Instagram, John Corey Brooks. The spelling of my name is John, J-O-N, Corey, C-O-R-Y, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S. And then we also, the band has a Facebook page, West Fork Revival.
I've been speaking with John Corey Brooks. This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB.
My name's Gunnar Zickler. I'm a bartender at Brown County Inn. We're having a retirement send-off for our good pal Jeff that's worked here for over a decade and we all love so much. It only felt right as he helped me party on my 21st birthday. He's the first one to serve me a legal drink, so it only felt right that I pay him back with a good time. Jeff is arriving. He is in the parking lot. So basically, when he walks in here, we're just going to surprise and, you know, just laugh and smile and all the good things.
Say, Jeff?
Nothing yet. I need a drink.
Oh, surprise!
Did you have anything to do with this?
No, nothing at all.
Hi, I'm Danny Key, and I've been a patron of the Brown County Inn Little Corn Crib here for a long time. I think about 2009 I started coming here, and honestly, I didn't know many people in Brown County. I was coming in with dates because they had a nice big fire. And this was the place to be. It was more Brown County than anything, you know. And Jeff was the bartender, and he would point at me, wink every time. You know, it might happen like, I don't know, every 3 months or so, a different person. He would wink and nod. Years later, I move here, and I bring my wife, who's sitting next to me, Hillary, for the first time. And Jeff gave me the big okay sign. He's like, I finally made it and got Jeff's approval. But since then, he's become a really good friend. He's a great bartender. We're going to see him on this side of the bar now a lot more. And he's just a great guy. And we're going to miss him in this capacity.
Hey, this is Jill. Hi, Jeff. Love you.
I'm Courtney Gosser. I'm the owner of Brown County Inn. And Jeff's worked for me now for 10 years. When we first went to buy the inn, we were walking the hallways before we bought the inn. And we saw Jeff in the hallway, and I remember a private conversation with the other owners where we were like, that man looks really mean, and we were really worried about him, and we weren't sure, like, if we would hire him on to the staff, and I kind of learned that his face was just worry that we maybe wouldn't take care of the inn, and he just was, concerned, but anyway, I mean, he's been the best. Lifelong friendship him and me now have, and to be his boss has been such a privilege.
Hi, I'm Travis Cornwell, and moved here a while ago, and Jeff was kind and was my friend in the beginning and ever since, and looking forward to seeing him on the other side of the bar. We have a blast with him and we're going to miss him.
Oh, my name's Janet Bell from Nottinghamshire, England. I just want to say Jeffrey's an all right bloke. He is. He's all right, and he's rather dishy and all.
My name's Christopher Eakins. I've lived here for way too long, and I met Jeff some time ago. I thought we won that war, and we got invaded by him, but he kind of gave the place a little class because of his accent, I thought. But he and I conjured up this t-shirt deal. We were supposed to get Lamborghinis, but they haven't come in yet, so whatever.
I'm Randall Hupp, and I can probably get beer much faster now.
Hi, this is Sweet Pea. This is Sherry Ann Wettstein, and I just have a real quick funny. I brought my mom in here one time, and we were ordering dinner, and she said, how does the salmon come? And what she meant was, like, what is it served with on the sides? And Jeff said, dead.
Happy retirement send-off, mister.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're in for it tonight.
Well, this is rather nice.
Congratulations, Jeff.
Thank you.
We love you.
Oh, my God.
Surprise. Are you surprised?
What the hell?
We love you so much.
I wonder why there were so many cars out there.
I didn't know you were this famous.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, Jim Eagleman gives us the history of Brown County State Park as it evolved from a game park. We'll hear John Corey Brooks perform his song Cottonwoods that was recorded live in our studio. But first, we'll take a little walk down memory lane as our founding mother, Pam Rader, leads a group discussion about Brown County Hour's 15th anniversary.
January is named after the Roman god Janus, who was depicted with two faces, one looking forward, one backward. Appropriate for the Brown County Hour this year, as we've completed 15 years of being on the air. And as we look forward to the next 15 years, we want to wish you all a happy new year and introduce our current crew. I am the oldest and longest serving person on the team. I expected to be replaced long ago. Sometimes I think about retiring, but it's just so dang interesting. The characters you meet, their talents and the stories, and of course the fun of our wonderful crew. Guess I'm in for another year. I'm going to introduce each of our crew members in order that they appeared on the show. So now I'm pivoting to Chad, who was integral in getting us started. He taught us all how to use the equipment and how to be radio worthy. Chad, my question to you is, why, after all these years, would you come back and want to be part of the show?
Well, I wasn't born in Brown County, but I got here as fast as I could. So my wife and I recently built a house here in Brown County, and this was, the being part of the Brown County Hour wasn't the reason for it, but it's definitely a nice side benefit. And I love this show, and I love where it's going in the future, especially getting out into the community and doing the field pieces. Like this very episode has 2 reports that are recorded out in the community. I love that. That's my favorite thing looking forward.
Well, thanks. It's been wonderful having you back. Now I'm pivoting to Rick, who is the longest member who has been with the show. And my question to you, Rick, is what kept you here?
Steve and Ann Miller were the ones who actually told me about the radio station. And as soon as I tuned in, I just fell in love with it. And then I heard about maybe starting a radio program. And I thought, well, let me go see what's going on. And so I've been here ever since, and I've not regretted a day of it. So thank you.
And now we go to Dave, who came on a little later, but definitely became a core member of our team.
Somewhere along the line, Jeff Foster gave me a phone call, and he was following my writing on Facebook, and he said, "We need content providers." Back to your question, why? The reason is, it's just so much fun. We have become the voice of Brown County. I think we produce really good shows, and it's just a wonderful team to work with, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm in for the duration.
Dave mentioned Jeff Foster, who was our original sound guy, and somewhere along the line, Jeff quit, and he found a replacement who gratefully agreed, and that was you, Chuck, and we would have been lost without you.
To put a finer point on that, Pam, I'm here because Foster tricked me. He said he was leaving the show and maybe I could come fill in for a little while. And this July will be my 10th anniversary of the show, and which seems impossible because we're all still so young and beautiful. But, you know, I'm thrilled to be here because of the people, not just the people around the table, but when I look at what a wonderful, diverse community we have, that we get to represent them. And I'm just so proud to be a part of that.
I agree. And somewhere along the line, Vera Grubbs had to leave the show and she found a replacement. And that was you, Sarah, and you fit right in.
Kudos to my friend Vera Dira, because she really got me interested and involved. And once I met the crew, it's like, what a passionate group of volunteers that are dedicated to community. Brown County Hour is a variety show, and I believe that variety is the spice of life. And here I get to interview and celebrate the varied characters within our community and learn more about it. So here we get to celebrate diversity. And that's what keeps us strong.
That's true. And last but not least, Lucy, my recollection is you pursued us.
I did. I thought that this group was just so dynamic. Yes, I was raised here in Brown County, and it just allows me to shine a light on all of my friends and family that live here in Brown County. And I've been on the show for 2.5 years, and I love it, and I'm not going anywhere.
Boy, time's gone fast. Well, radio listeners, we look forward to bringing you good shows for a whole nother year and beyond.
Happy New Year!
The purpose of the State Game Reserve in Brown County is to preserve the game therein. No hunting will be allowed. It will be to serve as a refuge for game hunted in other parts of the county. The overflow will scatter over the boundaries and be helpful in stocking lands adjacent. This excerpt from a report was filed with the Indiana Department of Conservation, now the DNR, in central office in Indianapolis on September 30, 1925. It designates the land as a state game reservation before Brown County State Park was established in 1929. Another term for game reservations was game farms. Statewide attempts to replenish wildlife took place on properties that over time had been abandoned due to massive timber removal and poor agricultural practices. Management on the reserve began in 1926 with the plantings of wildlife food plots. The report further states, quote, "In order that the land values not be inflated, the department employed an agent to secure options on the various tracts selected. Although employed by the Division of Fish and Game, the agent secured many options on his own. When all parcels could be secured and they were in his hands, he recorded them and later on transferred the options to the department. Mr. Lee Bright, a resident of Nashua, was appointed the land agent. The Bright Williamson Insurance Company in Nashville operated since 1921 on North Jefferson Street, and this was Lee's business. His clients were Brown County farmers, many destitute and living on scarred and eroded land, unwilling and unable to purchase policies. But when he approached them, this time with an offer to buy their land, they were more receptive, some anxious. In Bright's notes, there are 18 residents with whom he negotiated. The names, properties, size, and price per acre, and comments were recorded in his journal. Here's one. Joseph Roberts had 155 acres and was paid $12.90 an acre. And his report says he bought a better farm out on a good road. John Kreitzer had 73 acres. He was paid $11.10 an acre, and he bought a small farm, about 40 acres, and then died a short time later. Harry Smith, with 80 acres, put up the nastiest objection of all. He was paid $40 an acre. He took his money and went to Ohio and made the comment that he would not take back the Brown County old place if it were given to him. The land that now makes up Brown County State Park, Indiana's largest, had first experienced extensive timber removal, then short-sighted attempts at farming, and later a game farm. Initially, quote, a total of 10,662 acres of land that was purchased with funds provided by the hunters and fishermen who buy licenses, end quote. This statement from the 9th Annual Report of the Department of Conservation in 1927. Lee Bright's first intention was for a park to benefit the locals and tourists, but he knew that would come later. First, land had to be secured, and the Brown County Game Farm was a start. Game farms were established by the early Division of Fish and Game, now the Division of Fish and Wildlife, by securing abandoned farmland to serve as a release site for animals reared in captivity. At Brown County, game birds like ringneck pheasant, wild turkey, bobwhite quail, ruffed grouse, and the Hungarian partridge were raised in several pens along, quote, a prominent area in the park. That's now the Weed Patch Hill at the fire tower. From early photos, I suspect this was the large playing field by the park's fire tower. And later, the first deer release. It took place at Brown County Reserve with animals transported in from Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, states with excessive populations. A pending release program for elk was never completed. Attempts to replenish native wildlife in those days were eventually met with failure. the lack of success not entirely due to human error, high mortality resulted from pen-reared birds and animals when released, assuming they would simply adjust to the new environs. This was true in the Brown County Game Farm, but as managers reported disappointing findings, one specialist in the field of game management appeared. He was biologist and author Aldo Leopold. An 8 Midwestern state survey assigned to Leopold allowed him to gather information for his eventual text, Game Management. From his field notes, Leopold visited the Midwest universities and local libraries, and he consulted hunters. His journal and map show him traveling right through Indiana and through Brown County, May 3rd to June 14, 1929. Most likely, he conferred here with game farm managers. While he questioned the artificial rearing and release of native species with mounting skepticism, his first purpose was to determine what game was popular with hunters. The land comprising Brown County Game Farm in its entirety experienced these same issues, a property stripped of resources, reduced in productivity, but nature can heal even the most devastated land. Indiana game farm management slowly evolved with wildlife plantings, watering holes, and food plots. By the mid-30s, abused, uncultivated land recovered slowly as a brushy early successional stage, supplying wildlife what was needed, and in time, suitable range for native species with food, water, and cover on the landscape proved more successful, not releasing pen-reared birds and animals. "Set the table for wildlife, and they will come," said a veteran game farm manager. Today, views from the park's vistas, some stretching 10-plus miles over 16,000 acres, provide a most serene perspective. Far removed from early history of land abuse, struggle, and poverty, natural and historic places just don't spring up. They evolve, fueled by the ideas of locals who want something better, and helped by managers new in their skills who learn through trial and error a better way to care for the land. Hope you enjoyed this historic look back to the start of our state park. I'm Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings and the Brown County Hour.
This first song is one that I played at the Amplified Nashville. It's called Cottonwoods, a song I wrote years ago, mostly about, you know, traveling around the United States, and there's a lot of beautiful places, but something always kind of draws you back to where you're from. Southern Indiana is a very special place. Watching all these cottonwoods sway down by the river so far away. Came out as a young man searching, trying to find something that can't be purchased. Reminds me of darling sweet Anna, my old home in Southern Indiana. Well, the tobacco's gone, farmhouse fields, the dust is blowing. Chop the wood, let the candles burn. Flip the pages, the world turns. Take me back, Lord. Well, I'll be there before I am. Dear, take me back, Lord. Something has changed inside of my his before me. Born on the same family tree, where the roots run deep, fed by the waters of a limestone sea. Now I'm still running away, running like a stream from a sweat of flame.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 at Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our third segment, we go on location to Mike's Dance Barn for a line dancing lesson from dance instructor Billy Crace and his choreographer wife, Carla Willis Crace. Billy and Carla host events at dozens of venues, but Mike's is their favorite floor to dance on. They even got married in this room. Dave Seastrom has a few words about building a wooden gutter, and we'll close the show with the John Corey Brooks song, Leaving Wyoming. But first, we begin segment three with a poetry feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Alberson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys, while seated next to the wood stove in his cabin on Greasy Creek Road. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website, and Rick starts each stoveside survey with a description of that photo.
Looking at a photo of a very old metal rocking chair on the porch, its patina seemingly as old as the cabin. Alvy bought the chair in the spring of 1955. He'd finished building the long bird feeder just after the final snow that April. Vivian, Viv to all her friends and neighbors, painted it yellow, so inviting as the Easter lilies springing up beside the porch. Years passed and their metal rocking chair served them well, especially so after Alby was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. No longer could he maintain the cabin and his 3 acres of woods. Most days he could do little more than sit. He'd spent hours rocking the day away, gently reflecting back and forth over his long life in Brown County. Alvy weakened, he passed, and to this day remains fondly remembered by older folks, maybe even by the chair. Yet it sat empty for the next several months. Vivian couldn't bring herself to allow it to soothe her, one creaky rock at a time. Perhaps if I paint it red, I can use it once again. Paint it she did, alas, to no avail. The chair sat empty the next many years, even a decade or so after. She too passed, and the emptied cabin kept the lonely chair company. I've moved into the cabin, pledging it my companionship, intent on assuaging its loneliness. Yet the chair remains unused, the aura of its fading red and yellow patina an invisible emanation of warning to leave it empty. The chair is a monument, a quiet representation of loneliness, a reminder of the transitory nature of life, the frightening aloneness with which I was thrust into this world, its incredible intensity after losing my lifelong companion, the more frightening aloneness with which I will depart it. The chair sits empty, silently, without rocking, unless disturbed by an unwanted gust of winter wind forcing it once more to move its stiffened skeleton to creak just a bit again. Or maybe it does rock when no one's at the cabin, or in the deep darkness of another companionless night. Perhaps it sways back and forth, creaking as quietly as it possibly can, an unseen force seated upon it rocking back and forth, its loneliness away.
One, two, three, four, five. Say hello, Billy.
Hi, this is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour on WFHB. I'm here with a group full of people. Hey, everybody. We're here at Mike Stan's barn.
And that's Pam.
Live. Hey, I'm Raider.
And I'm Sarah Lytle. I'm with the crew. And our guests are...
I'm Billy Crace. They'd call me Dancing with Billy.
And I'm Carla Crace. I'm his wife. You've been doing this at Mike Stan's barn for how long now?
Yeah, I've been here for some time. It's right around 25 years. I played in the house band here for some years, and we had a dance instructor here, and he quit on us abruptly. And at this time, I'd been dancing for maybe 15 minutes. And I told Mike, I said, I'll take over the dance instructor duties here until you can find somebody more qualified.
And that's probably been a few years?
That's been 25 years. We're still waiting.
You're irreplaceable, that's why.
Well, now his name is on the sign, so unless he finds somebody by the name of Billy that knows how to dance that well, he might have a hard time replacing him.
And about how many people usually show up?
Anywhere from 60 to 65 on a Monday.
Wow,
and
that's a crowd.
90 to 100 on a Saturday.
Whoa.
Oh, Mike Music and Dance Barn is very famous in the line dance community, not just nationally, but internationally to some degree as well.
Interesting.
Well, we're really fortunate to have this right here in Brown County.
It is, true. And it's one of the most gorgeous floors, floors. We've traveled many places, even outside the state. And it's by far the most beautiful floor to dance on.
And wood is so good for the joints.
It is. It's called a raised floor, which means there's spacers underneath it that gives you the cushion. You don't notice that. But over time, if you dance for 20, 30 years on a floor, you'll know it. Your knees will know it.
So you two are married.
That's right. Okay. We got married in this room.
Oh, no kidding.
That's right.
It's a special room.
It is.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we love it here.
We dated here for about 14 years and then decided to tie the knot and actually stick it out with each other.
So you're really good partners, but when you line dance, do you have to have a partner?
You do not have to have a partner to line dance. However, if you go into more of the pattern partner dances and couples dances, then yes, it's helpful, but not necessary. We have them dance alone, too, for that.
You want to show us a few moves?
Yeah,
that's what we do here.
Let's do this.
We'll just have everybody line up right here behind me in nice, even lines. And we'll just simply do just a walk forward and back. So we'll start walking forward with our right. We'll step right, left, right, and kick. And we'll walk backwards, left, right, left, and touch. We'll make a similar step going to the both right and left, stepping right, left behind, right, and touch, and left, right behind, left, and touch. And this is half of a very simple pattern dance. Let's do this much from the top. 5, 6, 7, 8, walk right, left, right, and kick, and back, and touch, step side behind, side and touch, and side behind, side and touch. Let's add the next part. We'll step out, out, in for one, two, three, four. Again, five, six, seven, eight, and the last part of the dance. Step to the side and touch, step to the side and touch, and we'll walk around three-quarter turn to the right, stepping right, left, right, left, and the pattern starts back over. That's how simple it is. Everybody get it?
Hey. Well, you know, winter and early spring and stuff is such a time where people are going, how am I going to get exercise? So nasty outside. Well, this is a great way and meet new people, which you then have something in common, the dance stepping and the fun and the laughter.
Absolutely. It's very family-oriented. This is a family-oriented place. They can bring in their children, too, if they want to. That's fine. Even though we do have a bar present, you know, that can keep them on the other side of the room, and it's legal to do that here at a restaurant. Uh-huh. So but we just love it. We love the variety of dances. One of the things that we discovered over the years is it's not all country music anymore.
I was going to ask you about that.
It is definitely not. It's all genres of music. Because we have everything from hip-hop music to classical music to ballroom music to ethnic music in foreign languages that we don't even understand, but we don't care. We just, the steps go to it and it matches it, so that's all that matters.
So are there only a certain set of pattern steps, or do you invent new ones, or do you mix and match them?
Mix and match. Some dances are song specific. They go with one dance, one song, it always goes together. Some of them are more generic where we can substitute and put different music with the same dance, or a different dance with a different song. You know, we can switch it up a little bit. But for the most part, it's song specific.
But yeah, Carla and I have choreographed a number of dances together, some of them very popular internationally. Carla is one of the more popular line dance choreographers in the world right now, so we're very proud to be working together in our choreography as well as our instruction.
So do you have other events or other venues that you work at?
That we work at? Absolutely. Yes, we are here every Monday night. We're also at the Greenwood Moose Lodge on Tuesday nights, every Tuesday night. We have at the Milray Center in Columbus, Indiana. Mm-hmm. I have a class there on Wednesday afternoons, and he has another on Friday mornings. And sometimes we're back at the Greenwood Moose Lodge DJing on their open dance night up there on a Friday night. And then on the first Saturday, we're back here always.
I don't ever get tired of it. I love doing this. This is what I was made to do. And so I look forward to it each and every single time.
I don't get tired of it, but I do get tired. It's a lot of driving and a lot of work, but it's well worth it. We have a wonderful dance family. Thousands of people that we never would have met otherwise.
Everybody say, hello, Billy.
Okay. One, three.
Hello, Billy.
I love when they do that.
Cheers.
As a person who makes things, I always wanted to build my own house. This desire was not uncommon among my friends at the time, and along the way, I helped a few of them as they built their own houses. In typical fashion, I read everything I could get my hands on about house design, passive solar energy, and carpentry. Building the house took the better part of 2 years, and we moved into our not-so-finished home the week before Thanksgiving in 1987. Somewhere, I got the notion to build a half-round porch. After all, it was my house, and if I wanted a half-round porch, there was no one to tell me not to do it. The framing for the conical roof portion was challenging, and I quickly understood that I could make anything look reasonable on paper, but turning it into practical framing was an entirely different matter. This is when I decided to make a scale model of the porch that would enable me to take the angles and the numbers from an actual three-dimensional object. With a bit of fussing and a setback or two, this worked like a charm. Eventually, the porch was built, and I had another dilemma to figure out. Out here in the far reaches of the hinterlands, we're beyond access to county water. Our solution was to construct a cistern and plumb the gutters to a series of filters and pipes that feed rainwater into a storage tank. When the porch was done, there was a lot of additional roof surface that I wanted to add to our rain gathering. The thing is, there are no curved gutter systems that will conform to the half-round fascia that I had built. My gutter guy, Ron, was at our place making several runs of standard aluminum gutters for the house, and I asked him if he would let me move the die on his extruder back on one side to see if we could form the shape that I needed. I offered to pay for everything, even if it didn't work out. Ron hemmed and hawed, looked at the source of his livelihood, and then turning to me, he said there was no way he would let me fool with his machine. His response was disappointing, but I understood his need to protect his investment. The other thing I always wanted to build was my own boat. In a moment of inspiration, the thought occurred to me that using the strip-build method that's used to make canoes and other shapely small watercraft might produce the shape I was looking for in the gutter. The more I thought about it, the more likely it seemed that this could be done. At the time, I didn't have the money or the extra time to build a boat, but the need for water made the otherwise absurd idea of constructing a wooden strip-built gutter seem almost practical. A builder's jig was set up in the barn, and I cut several wooden profiles in the shape of a gutter, scribed the arc onto the jig, and screwed the profiles in place at regular intervals to create the basic shape. A series of 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch white oak strips were cut for the sides. When the bottom of the gutter was cut from the marine plywood, then it was ready for assembly. Plastic tape was applied to the wooden profiles to prevent the glue from adhering to them, and one by one, the white oak strips were glued into place using epoxy. The wooden part of the gutter is about 30 feet long, and this was no small amount of effort to fit all together and to make it watertight. When I was making this wooden gutter, my son Ben took one look at it and he said, "You better make two of them because there's no one else who could replace it." We laughed, but there was truth in what he said. 15 years later, the gutter needed repair, and I took it down and worked on it in the shop. The rotten areas were replaced, and a fresh coat of epoxy and varnish was added to the gutter, and it was returned to service. The gutter seemed to be holding up pretty well, but a few weeks ago, a dead hickory blew down in a fierce windstorm, and part of the tree hit the porch roof and ruffled the feathers on the wooden gutter. A small portion of the gutter will need some attention this spring. And while I'm up there, we'll take a good look at the rest of it and decide where to go from here. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
Yes, this next song was one that I wrote in 2023. I lived in Laramie, Wyoming, and I was moving back here. And so I wrote the song, Leaving Wyoming.
never seen a train on the Tulip Trestle. Never been one for a hustle. But now I'm leaving Wyoming, just another Indiana homecoming. I left my heart in a ghost town. I'll be back for another round. I left my heart in a ghost town. I'll be back for another round. Ooh.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 166 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.